Hello, everyone, and welcome to our KrausCast webinar series. My name is Amy Beecham, and I'm the Marketing Director here at Kraus Financial. Today's topic is Understanding Long-Term Care Insurance, hosted by our Director of Legal Education, Jim Wolverton. First, we have a few housekeeping items for you today. If you have any questions during the webinar, you can go ahead and type those in the questions section of the GoToWebinar toolbar, and we will answer them at the end of the presentation. Next, a copy of today's PowerPoint can be found in the handouts section of the GoToWebinar toolbar. And we also ask that you please complete the post-webinar survey that will pop up on your screens at the end of the presentation, as we truly do appreciate your feedback. And now we will get to the presentation. Jim, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you so much, Amy. I am really excited, and I know this is a funny thing to get excited about, but to teach a course on long-term care insurance. I have been in the elder law industry for 12 years now. And it was always something that we have taught, that this is something your clients should have. And that's kind of where we left it. As we here at Kraus Financial have been working on getting information over to attorneys about long-term care insurance, it's been very eye-opening to me in a positive way of learning how these insurance products can help your clients think outside of just the Medicaid world that we usually live in. So what I'm talking about is how long-term care insurance works and who is it for is kind of the subtitle of this course. And really getting the basics down will be the point of this course here today. And hopefully you'll find it as interesting as I did when I was getting into it and being able to wrap my head around some of these concepts and why we were telling attorneys that your clients should have this, even if we didn't know the ins and outs of long-term care insurance. But just a little bit about Kraus Financial before we get into the meat of the program today. Kraus Financial is an attorney-led firm that provides asset preservation solutions for estate planning and elder law attorneys and their clients using our insurance specialized products, including long-term care insurance, resources and support. We help attorneys streamline the process of advising clients planning for long-term care. We have 30 plus years of experience in the Medicaid planning world, and we have 40 plus professionals on staff. And one thing that a lot of attorneys don't know about Kraus Financial is we do have a good number of long-term care insurance professionals here on staff. And it has been, as I was putting this program together, my pleasure to work with a lot of them and get to know them and really realize how deep our knowledge in long-term care insurance is and how we can help you and your clients onboard these services so that hopefully if a plan is fully insured down the road, we never have to talk to you about the Medicaid compliant annuity. But if that does happen, we do handle 400 plus cases of the Medicaid compliant annuity each and every month. So our planners have seen it, they've done it. And again, a lot of some of the professionals that we have on staff have a lot of long-term care insurance experience as well, working directly with consumers and as well as with agents and attorneys. So it's amazing to work with a company that is so deep and has the knowledge on these topics that we do here at Kraus Financial. So let's start with the basics around long-term care insurance and really get our feet under us. And then we'll talk about some of the factors that go into pricing and coverage. We'll talk about traditional policies, and then we'll talk about hybrid policies, and then we'll talk about how those can be integrated into your Medicaid plans that you're thinking about for your clients. And then we'll take some questions and get out of here. Okay, so what is long-term care insurance from a definitional standpoint? It is an insurance product that provides coverage in the event of an extended long-term care situation. So policies, the way that I like to break them up is, where are you receiving those services and what types of care are you receiving? And with long-term care insurance, I am so used to being in the Medicaid world that we're just talking about nursing home care under traditional Medicaid planning. Some states we have robust home community-based services. Most states do not. With an insurance product, you can define it and buy what type of coverage and what type of setting that you want. And that is a concept for me when I was learning about long-term care insurance. I was asking very specific questions around nursing home care. And what the professionals here on staff helped me do is really open my mind to say, well, what happens before nursing home care. What happens when the person just needs a little bit of help at home or wants to go to an assisted living facility where they don't have that nursing home level of care that we're always talking about, Medicaid world, who's paying for that? And that's where you can build these insurance products and these insurance policies around what the client actually wants to have happen rather than the payment of last resort, like we talk about with Medicaid, that just occurs in the nursing home. So the settings for an insurance can be at home and assisted living, can even cover some hospice care. And then the types of care that this is covering is also much broader. It's not just that nursing home bill. It can also be, obviously, long-term care at home, but it can also provide respite care for caregivers, give them a break, bring in some medical equipment that could make life easier, homemaker and chore services. If you're having a tough time getting around at home, you're not feeling well, well, who's taking care of your home and making sure that things are clean? And maybe you want to go somewhere and see some people and go to adult daycare. It can cover those things, make some home modifications. And again, hospice, if you're not able to receive that benefit through Medicare, this is where this insurance can really come in when you're talking to your clients. And I imagine, you know, this is not crisis planning. This is proactive planning. When you're going through these options with your clients about where, what types of services are they going to need, and we're opening up our minds outside of just that one alleyway that we go down when we're talking about Medicaid planning and nursing home care, but a bigger picture, where do you want to receive that care and how are you going to pay for it? And as I was doing the research, there is what's called the Milliman Long-Term Care Insurance Survey. And that's the source for some of these numbers. And if you're interested in long-term care insurance, that's a great place to start to really learn some of these stats. And I thought the most interesting one is the setting that long-term care insurance policyholders receive their care that has the highest percentage. And again, with my years and years of talking about Medicaid planning, I always go straight to nursing home care. But the most frequent place where the insured receive their care is at home or adult daycare. So that's what they're using these insurance policies for, is to get that proper care at home, which most people, when you ask them, all the surveys that we use in Medicaid planning, they say they want to receive that care at home. So this is how you can help your clients plan for it and pay for it. Assisted living, 35%, and the nursing home, 26%. And you can see the cost there where home health aid generally is higher than assisted living. So, and that comes from those Genworth surveys that we use all the time to see the cost of your local nursing home. So you can see how those costs work and where insured policyholders are triggering those policies to receive that care, which again opens our minds to not just thinking that one-way road straight to the nursing home. So the next question is what I get anytime we talk about long-term care insurance, and this is one that I always had, is how much does it cost? And really the policy variables is what is going to determine the different benefits and the cost of the premium. So just think about your homeowner's insurance or your car insurance. The greater the coverage you get and the more bells and whistles you add on to that policy, that's going to increase the premium amount that you pay. So what are some of those variables that, as an attorney, if you're advising a client, do you want to be aware of? And these are the basics. Elimination period. So the elimination period on a long-term care insurance policy are the calendar day waiting period before a policy benefits begin. So basically how this works is and we'll talk a little bit about how to trigger a policy, but once a policy is triggered, the insurance, unless you get a rider to waive this elimination period, isn't going to kick in immediately. There's generally what's called this elimination period that is generally in increments of 30, 60, or 90 days that says, well, you have to privately pay to receive that care once the policy is triggered for 30, 60, or 90 days, then the policy will kick in. And again, you can get a rider that eliminates that elimination period. And again, that costs a little bit more, and you can add that to that, and we'll look at how that is structured. Then the second thing you want to look at when you're talking to clients about a long-term care insurance policy is that benefit period. And that benefit period is the minimum amount of time long-term care insurance will pay out benefits if you maximize what's called the maximum daily or monthly benefit. But what happens here is that benefit period could be longer than what's stated on the policy if you're taking less than the maximum monthly benefit. So policyholders that use less than their full daily benefit may find their policy benefit period is effectively extended, so long as they're not maximizing that each and every month. So when you look at that, that's really a minimum number rather than how long that policy is going to work. Just depending on once that policy is triggered, are you using the maximum monthly benefit, which is the next bullet point there, that's the initial maximum dollar amount the policy will pay each month. And then we have the total benefits or pool of money. So that's the pool of money that you have to use. That's the initial maximum dollar amount payable over the life of the policy. You'll see those. And again, the greater these numbers are, the higher the price of the premium. Inflation protection, very, very important when you're purchasing an insurance policy, because today's dollars aren't going to be the same as when these policies are generally triggered. If you're talking to a client who's buying them at a younger age. So this allows all those policy benefits, the monthly benefit, the daily benefit, the total benefits to grow over time with the rising cost of long-term care services. And that range, you usually start with a client talking to them about 3%, but that can go up 4%, 5%. But again, that's going to increase the premium. Then you have single versus joint policies. Joint policies with a partner generally provide savings when you're comparing the same policy issued for individuals. So if you're working with a married couple, there might be some benefits there. And then you need to get into the details of how those are going to work when the benefits are triggered between a single and a joint policy, and how those pools work together. And that can vary greatly based on the provider, the insurance carrier, and what that policy says. So just some policy variables to keep in mind from a basic level of what's going to impact the price of that insurance policy. So I always overthink about purchasing insurance. So I wanted to make sure I included a slide more for me than probably for you guys. But insurance brokers and agents, I always get all these things confused, even though I do work at one. But just to take it real simple, is an insurance agent works for an insurance broker who have contracted with insurance companies to sell long-term care insurance. Now, when I talk to attorneys, a lot of times they'll say, well, can I be that insurance agent? And obviously with any question with attorney, it depends. You do have to be licensed, and then you want to think through all the ethical issues that might come in from wearing the attorney hat while also selling an insurance product. There's lots of attorneys that feel comfortable with that, that have reviewed those ethics rules and are okay with proper disclosures and doing all that. But just be aware that you would be serving as an agent working for a broker and then providing contracts through an insurance carrier. So that's kind of how those three levels work. And so the client would work with an agent to figure out what benefits are most important to them, obviously compare and contrast those different variables that we look at, what's most important, how much is it going to be, does that make sense, and then obviously based on current health and finances. Another big world that I got into when I was preparing this presentation is that all of these companies and products are regulated very closely and licensed through each state's Department of Insurance and are subject to state law. So we do talk a lot about Medicaid. We're very used to a lot of variables in state-specific rules, and what's allowed in one state might not be allowed in another. Same thing with these insurance products, is every state kind of has some different nuances in how they're regulated and how they're licensing. What type of license do you have to have to sell what type of insurance? That's all through your state that you have to get that license. And there is what's called the National Association of Insurance Commissioners that have created some long-term care insurance model acts and regulations to try to create some uniformity in there. And most states have followed those. So as you look into your state-specific rules and regulations around long-term care insurance, hopefully they've followed some of these model acts and regulations, so they're not coming out of left field, but they do tend to follow kind of what is standard throughout the country. Okay, so let's kind of switch over. If we have a client who's looking at long-term care insurance, you've talked to them about it, it's something they can afford, they want to look into it. What is the process for doing that? The first thing that someone will do is they'll apply for long-term care insurance through an application process. And that application for long-term care insurance focuses primarily on age, health, medical history, family history, and then I call it lifestyle or habits. So how is the person living? Just like a Medicaid application, you don't want to be lying on that about any sort of health issues or pre-existing conditions, because if you don't, if it's discovered later that you weren't forthright on that application, there are laws that allow the insurance company to rescind those policies based on the length of the policy and how serious the misrepresentation was. So one thing around pre-existing conditions, this is not covered by federal law. Pre-existing conditions are not protected. It is the insurer's choice to issue a policy, and there's no right to long-term care insurance. So it's not like health insurance after the Affordable Care Act. So you'll want to just be aware that being forthright on the application is the most important. They will review medical records. So we want to make sure that we're advising our clients that, yeah, it might increase the price. It might make underwriting a little bit harder, but it's better than putting in an application with a misrepresentation on it, paying that premium for a few years. It's discovered that you lied on the application, and then the insurance company can rescind that policy. So I think it's always important just to review that with clients and make sure that they are being forthright. As you're going through the application, there's what is called in this world 8 knockout questions. These are 4 of them. The one that I did is a 44-page application, insurance application. These are the 4 initial knockout questions that we have here that I thought were most interesting. And again, we can get you those if you're interested in seeing the rest of them. But at the top, it starts out, do you use any of the following? Cane, wheelchair, walker, electric scooter, oxygen. Within the last 6 months, have you been confined to residential care, assisted living, nursing home, or adult daycare? Do you require the assistance or supervision of another person with ADLs, basically? And then have you been diagnosed as having or receiving medical advice or medical care by a member of the medical profession for any of the following? Then it lists a number of conditions there. So if you answer yes, and you can see that here at the top here, to any of the questions in this section, there's 4 other questions that deal with being diagnosed or treated with AIDS, receiving benefits under Medicaid disability or workers' comp or SSI disability. Do you receive VA disability for a mental nervous condition or PTSD? And do you have an active power of attorney making decisions on your behalf, or the other 4 questions I didn't include in this slide, would be knockout questions. So if your client is answering yes to those, it's not even worth submitting an application. They won't qualify for long-term care insurance. The rest of the questions on the application will determine whether or not it'll go to underwriting, the application, and the cost. So all these things will go into cost based on the answers. These aren't knockout questions, but these are variable questions. And I won't read through all these, but I just thought number 3 was the most interesting one here, is do you have for your use a handicap parking sticker or handicap license plate? Might be good to get you to the front of the grocery store, but not so good for your long-term care insurance premium. Some other questions on the application, again, I'll just highlight the ones that I thought were interesting here, are the lifestyle questions that are on that application. So if you go down to 7, in the last 12 months, have you used any form of tobacco or any form of nicotine replacement cessation product, such as nicotine gum, patch spray, e-cigarettes, or vapor? Again, these aren't knockout questions. These are how often do you use it, and the insurance carriers will take into mind these questions, and then it's kind of based on a scale. The more you use, the higher your premium is going to be, or whether or not they'll approve you for a policy. So again, not knockout questions, but questions that will help determine the insurance company whether or not the client could be an insured. Some other ones that are on here, do you use drugs, recreational marijuana? That's a big one here in Colorado. And then alcohol on 11, do you regularly consume 4 or more alcoholic beverages per day, or do you drink 5 or more drinks per day, 1 or more days per week? So kind of those lifestyle questions are going to impact insurability as well as cost of premium. But the big one is age. So the older the applicant, the greater the chance that the application will be denied. So you can kind of see those numbers there, and this is based off of the American Association for Long-Term Care Insurance. They do these surveys fairly regularly. I think it's annually, where they come out with these numbers on insurability. So ages 40 to 49, those have a 62% approval for a long-term care insurance policy. And then as you can see, as you get older, that percentage goes down as you would imagine. So it goes down to 46 in your 50s and 38% in your 60s. What also happens is your initial premiums, the cost, your initial premium is also based on age of the applicant. And so basically what these two boxes there on the right, I was talking to Amy before we started, it's a little confusing, is in your 50s, premiums typically increase 2% each year of your age. So if you're a 51-year-old is going to have a 2 to 4% lower premium than a 51-year-old or 52-year-old. And a 52, a 2 to 4% lower premium than a 53-year-old. So as you go through each birthday, the cost of a long-term care insurance premium is going to rise in your 50s 2 to 4%. And in your 60s, that age gap grows to 6 to 8%. So again, always good to talk to your clients about these issues, just like proactive planning. The earlier, the better. Maybe they're not ready to move forward with an irrevocable trust. What they might be ready to do is let's get some insurance in place so that we can trigger that should the client want to move forward with Medicaid planning down the road. And then the National Council on Aging and basically everybody that's looked at these numbers recommends that a policy should be purchased between the ages of 50 and 65. So being able to talk to your clients in that age range will be important to them in getting the lowest possible policy rate as well as the approval rate goes up with the younger the client. So as the client goes through the application process, then they'll have to go through underwriting. If it's initially approved, they'll go through underwriting. And this is where the insurance company is going to look at the applicant's current and past health before issuing the policy. And they'll determine the client's health class, which is going to also affect the price and the premium. Basically, the healthier the client, the lower the cost. And you'll see these health class options for folks are usually within the terminology of preferred, standard, or select, or class one. And the way that underwriting is done is it's a review of the medical records. So when you submit an application, you basically sign a HIPAA release that says, yeah, you can look at my medical records, make sure everything I said on that application is true. The in-person interviews with a nurse, genetic testing, cognitive testing, prescription drug reports, and other testing. One thing that I found as I was asking folks how this is done is a lot of the times this is based on insurance codes that your doctor sends through to the insurance for billing. And that's really where a lot of these records are being analyzed at. So again, another reason to be honest on that application, because as they go through underwriting, they will verify and look into the medical records and the history, working through prescription reports as well as those insurance billing reports. Sometimes the insurance company will request that they meet with you in person, but that's usually if you're over age 65. So this would be the second bullet point. If you're age 65 or older or have certain medical conditions, a nurse will come to your home and meet with you in person. So they want to see how do you get around, what's your living conditions like. So they really want to do some good underwriting. If you're age 64 or younger, the interview is generally just over the telephone and it's a review of all those questions to make sure that you filled all those out right. You didn't have to change anything through the underwriting process. So under 65, usually, so long as you don't have medical conditions, over the phone. Over 65, generally, someone from the insurance company is going to come out and meet with the applicant in person. So I wanted to put a slide together that shows some sample quote comparison based on age to kind of hit this point home. So we'll just kind of go through these real quick. Again, this is just a snapshot of some basic long-term care insurance estimates. So we have age 45, health class is preferred because they're younger and healthy. Monthly benefit on this is $3,000 with a total benefit amount of $110,000. We have a 3% compound inflation rider, and the monthly premium for that particular insurance is $93.14 a month. So that would grow with that 3% compound inflation rider by the time this age 45 person turns 80, up to $8,442 each month in benefits, and then the total benefit amount at age 80 would grow to $309,000. Age 55, now we have the health class is standard, so it's not that lowest rate, but we have the same monthly benefits, and that monthly premium's gone up to $132.50. Age 65, you can see that monthly premium's up to $188, and then those premiums or those benefits continue to grow at that rate, but they obviously won't grow as high because they haven't had the same amount of time to grow, but people haven't been paying the premium into it either. So I think this is just a really helpful slide when people ask, well, how are these priced? And you have a good idea of how age really does play into it if you take everything out and just do a real simple price comparison. So what happens if your client has purchased one of these policies, they've continued to pay the premium, but now they need to use it? We'll refer to that as going on claim. The first thing that the client will need to do is trigger the policy benefits. And that's the terminology that's used in the contracts is benefit triggers. And they're usually defined within the policy. But most of long-term care insurance policies kind of have the same language, where it'll be if you need help due to cognitive impairment or someone needs help with two activities of daily living, and then their condition will last 90 days or more. And if you've done any VA work, you're very familiar with the activities of daily living, but I have those listed there on the right. So what the policyholder will do is they'll file a claim with a claims representative from the carrier. They'll review it. They'll certify it based on medical records. They might even do their own assessment just to review to make sure that that person does need help with those activities of daily living or have that cognitive impairment. Then they'll put a plan of care created. They'll create a plan of care together, and that's when that elimination period starts. So you make the claim, it's reviewed, you put a plan of care together, boom, the elimination period starts. So whether or not you purchase 30, 60, 90 days, that's when we want to get that time started, privately pay for those 30, 60, 90 days, whatever in your policy, and then the benefits are triggered and the insurance company will start paying out those benefits. This I thought was helpful just to kind of see how those terms are defined in the policies. So you can take a look at that. You must be chronically ill and receive a written plan of care from a licensed care practitioner prescribing the qualified long-term care services. And then we have chronically ill as defined as at least two activities of daily living. You're unable to perform those without substantial assistance from another person for a period that's expected to last at least 90 consecutive days, or you require substantial supervision to protect yourself from threats to health or safety due to a severe cognitive impairment. So a lot of definitions, insurance policy, it's not the most exciting thing to read, but it does help kind of see how they define that. So again, we've talked about elimination periods. Generally, those are 30, 60, or 90 days. That's when the insured is responsible for paying for their care. If you can coordinate this properly with Medicare, you might be able to kind of cut some of that cost coming out of pocket and have Medicare pay for that. And I think what's really important to talk to clients about is you can also purchase on these insurance contracts a waiver of that elimination period for home health care. So you can waive that, have somebody come in during that elimination period and get some help at home while you wait out that elimination period, maybe then go to the assisted living facility. Or get the full benefits rolling if you have that waiver of elimination period. Again, that's an add-on going to increase the premium. But I think that's an important one, so you don't have to come out of pocket 30, 60, or 90 days prior to getting some help with those costs. And again, I've put those some sample language there if you want to take a look at that. So how are these benefits paid out? Most of the policies that you'll see will be a reimbursement policy where they'll pay actual costs of expenses up to that preset monthly or daily limit, which is determined when the policy is purchased. So this is really straightforward. So we have Mary goes to the nursing home, triggers her policy, and she can either have the nursing home just bill the insurance company directly, or Mary can pay out of pocket and then get reimbursed directly once she submits those receipts. Other policies that you might see are cash disability or indemnity. This would be some older policies. Maybe you're reviewing. These were more common in the 90s and 2000s, where it just pays a preset amount. So it says, well, I'm going to pay out each day a certain amount regardless of actual expenses accrued. what you'll see in there is they're generally limited by maximum per diem under the Internal Revenue Code. And so this year, that number is 410 per day. So if you see that language, you'll want to check and see what year it is and how that's increased. And so John goes to the nursing home, an example here, and his policy states he gets $300 a day. He'll get $9,000 just on based on 30 days per month, regardless of the cost, actually requires him to stay at the nursing home. So those indemnity contracts, when you see that language, that's what that means. Is they're just going to send out a check. You spend it however you want. We don't want to be dealing with receipts. And then again, you want to make sure that you're talking to clients about inflation protection to make sure that when these policies are actually being used, generally years and years after they're purchased, that those benefits are also growing along with the cost of care, so that it's actually covering what the person wants it to cover and intended to do when they purchased it. So now we'll kind of talk about the different types of long-term care insurance. We'll start with traditional, and then we'll go into what's referred to as asset-based or hybrid. So traditional long-term care insurance works similar, and I always explain it. It's just like your homeowners or your automobile insurance, where you hope you never use it. It's one of those things that you pay for and you hope you never use it. So you pay your premiums, and as long as the policy is in effect, when claims are made, then services are needed. You have automobile insurance, you drive around for 20 years, you never get in a wreck, you get in a wreck, you use your automobile insurance. You have long-term care insurance, you never use it. You need help with two or more ADLs, you trigger the policy, you use that insurance to help pay for it. A lot of folks have a lot of concerns about premiums being raised. The way that premiums are raised is they're raised on based on the class of policies. An insurance carrier says this class of policies that was issued in this year, we need to raise those to make sure they're financially viable and we can pay out claims. They'll go to the State Department of Insurance and say this whole class needs to be increased. Now, I was looking into this question, and with Mutual of Omaha, which is a policy that I purchased, they haven't raised a class of insurance since long-term care insurance, or the type that I purchased, since 2013. So those insurance premium raises come along, that just like any other insurance, your insurance premiums do go up. I know my homeowners have gone through the roof here in Colorado with all the hail and wildfires that we have, but those do go up, but they do have to be approved. And since the 90s and 2000s, the price of these premiums, they've really become more stable than they were in the 90s and 2000s. So that's kind of how those rate increase. You'll hear that a lot. That, yeah, I had one. It went up a lot. There's a lot of raises in premium, and I bet they purchased those in the 90s or 2000s, and now things have kind of settled a little bit more. The traditional long-term care insurance policies are generally reimbursement policies with those daily, monthly limits. And then one thing that I thought was interesting, again, going back to the use it or lose it element of these, is most carriers, they do offer an option to add a refund of premium to refund some or all of your premiums minus any claims paid when you pass away to a named beneficiary. So basically any money that you put into this insurance policy, if you don't use it, that premium can be paid to a named beneficiary. You're not going to get that money back, but you can name a beneficiary that after you pass away would be able to receive that. And again, that's another add-on to the policy that will increase the premium. But if that's a concern, is I don't want to just lose this money, okay, cool, let's name a beneficiary, and that money you can pass it on that way. So if you're talking to clients about long-term care insurance policies, ask the agent, hey, is there a refund of premium available? How does that work? And take a look at that. So we always get lots of questions about costs. So we wanted to kind of go back to that minimum long-term care insurance survey. For an average premium is $3,618 a year. The average benefit period is 3 years. The average maxly monthly benefit in 2023 dollars, I think is when this insurance survey was taken, is a little bit over 5,000. And the average issue age, again, is between 55 and 64. That's kind of that sweet spot where people are purchasing these traditional policies. So let's just do a quick example, really straightforward and simple. We have Daniel, who's planning for retirement and wants to ensure his children are not responsible for providing him care in the future. Daniel's 56. He has fair health. He's fine. So he purchases a policy that has a monthly benefit of $4,000. His maximum benefit of the total policy is $165,000 or 3 years. And remember that 3 year term is the maximum or the minimum if he's receiving the maximum monthly benefit. We have a 3% rider on that. He has a 90-day elimination period, so his annual premium is going to be $2,248. So watch Daniel age before our eyes. Watch the picture. Boom. Daniel just got 25 years older, and he's 81 years old. So he now requires long-term care. Due to his inflation rider, his policy benefits have also grown. So now his monthly benefit is, he's 81. His monthly benefit has grown to over $9,000. His pool of money to work from is over $335,000, 90-day elimination period, and he paid $56,000 into it. So when you talk to financial advisors, that's what they're really looking at, is what are the potential benefits that they're getting from the investment. So this investment is $56,000 to get a potential pot or pool of money of $335,000. That's a good return on the investment should you need it. So that's that traditional policy. And that's, I was listening to a financial advisor talk about this, and that's how they look at it, is how much are you putting in? What is your potential to get out? Should you need it? And that's money that you wouldn't have to move from other investments. Instead, you've protected all those other investments that are growing by using an insurance policy to cover that. So just a different way to think about these things than we normally do as attorneys thinking about Medicaid planning. With traditional policies, there was an effort by the federal government to incentivize folks to purchase long-term care insurance policies. And the way that they've done that is they tied it to Medicaid benefits. So basically, if you have a state partnership policy that a client has purchased and they've used the general, and again, these are state specific, so kind of the general concept is if those benefits have been paid on behalf of someone applying for Medicaid, those benefits paid out will turn into exempt resources for the individual resource allowance on a dollar-by-dollar basis. And that is pretty much across the board. There's nuance to all this, and I don't want to get into it because I'm just starting to realize how variable that is for each state. But look into your state partnership policy section of your Medicaid manual and also your administrative code, and you'll kind of find what that language is and how they do vary state to state. What you'll also want to look at is how that works for a state recovery as well, because some states will actually exclude that same amount for a state recovery. Some states won't, some states will, so you want to definitely take a look. Most states have a partnership program. You can see the exclusions there on the screen, and the key for a policy to qualify as a state partnership policy, it has to be a traditional policy, so the ones we just talked about, have inflation protection on it, and be issued after the state adopted its partnership program. So if you have a client who has a traditional policy that's a little bit older, you might want to take a look at that. I think Colorado adopted theirs in 2013, just for kind of some concept around that of what you might be looking at as far as reviewing those to see whether or not those would work as a state partnership policy to increase the individual resource amount. I included the partnership policy language from the Colorado Medicaid manual here, just so you kind of know what you're looking for. Go down to the second paragraph there. It says specifically the asset eligibility and recovery provisions of the Medicaid program of Colorado are applied by disregarding an amount of assets which is equal to the amount of insurance benefits you've received from your partnership policy. For example, if you receive $200,000 in insurance benefits from your partnership policy, you generally would be able to retain $200,000 of assets above and beyond the amount of assets normally permitted for Medicaid eligibility. And here's what I really like here, is likewise, Medicaid would disregard up to $200,000 of the same assets in your estate at the time of your death, for which can then be passed on to your chosen beneficiary. So you get the double benefit here in Colorado. Again, you want to look at your Medicaid manual and see what it says about the exclusion of assets as well as a state recovery in your state, should you be in a state that has a partnership policy in effect in their Medicaid manual. So another reason that a traditional policy might make sense. Okay, so that's kind of that traditional side of things. People weren't real happy with this type of insurance, and so they said, hey, I don't want to just have use it or lose it. So insurance companies came back and said, great, let's create something that works for us and it works for you, the customer. Obviously, the insurance company always wins, but it's at least something that's a little bit different than that traditional insurance policy. So what they call that is, you've heard it probably referred to as a few different terms, and they all kind of mean the same thing. You have hybrid long-term care insurance is probably what we'll call it, asset-based, life combination, or linked benefit. Consists of basically what that is a life insurance or an annuity contract with a long-term care benefit attached to it. And these policies, because they're generally requiring the policy owner to put a lump sum up front as an investment, have a little bit more of a streamlined or simplified underwriting process, but many of those same underwriting principles that we looked at apply. Are you adding on riders? What's your age? What's your health? And all that will still come into play for primarily the long-term care side of things to be able to access those benefits. And you'll hear there's a lot of different vocabulary out there, so I tried to simplify it, but it might not be 100% accurate. But basically what you want to look at is, does a life insurance have what's called an acceleration of death benefits rider on it or a long-term care rider? And we'll talk about the difference between those. If you see a life insurance policy with an acceleration of death benefits rider, that basically means is that the holder of that policy can access some or all the death benefit for long-term care expenses. So they can get in there and they can use the death benefit of the life insurance policy before they pass away for those long-term care needs. And it follows that same process. You still have to trigger. You have to go through all those long-term care insurance issues that we looked at earlier to get those benefits started. But now you're draining out the death benefit and cash value of that life insurance policy. And they, you know, they can be paid over lump sum and over time annual. This would be a nice situation where you have a client who has some assets. They wanted to purchase a life insurance policy that will grow, but let's add some long-term care insurance and acceleration of benefits to that. So should they need long-term care before they pass away, they can use that. And if they don't touch it, then the death benefit will continue on to their beneficiaries. So the way that the death benefit, the face amount and the cash value is impacted by a payment is you take the face amount of the benefit payment, multiply the results of the benefit payment divided by the acceleration of benefit balance before the benefit payment. And then you can see how that language also applies to the cash value. So you're pulling down the value of that life insurance contract if you're using the long-term care benefits out of it. Now you'll see another option there is a life insurance with a long-term care rider. And what the difference is, it's subtle, but it can be important to folks, is that even if you access all the long-term care insurance benefits out of that policy, there's still a death benefit available when you pass away. So this is a guaranteeing a death benefit going to a beneficiary, even if the person uses up all the long-term care insurance out of that policy. So you can kind of see how this is worded. If no long-term care benefits are received, the guaranteed benefit equals the stated death benefit amount when the policy is issued. So it's exactly as written in the life insurance contract. However, if benefits are received for long-term care, the policy will provide the greater of the remaining death benefit or the amount specified by the residual death benefit, the residual death benefit being 10% of the base face amount for this contract. And those numbers can go up and down based on what type of policy that you purchase. So that's one way to kind of look at these hybrid policies. You can either use up all the death benefit or there's a guaranteed death benefit even if you used up all of the long-term care insurance benefits baked into them. So let's just do a quick example of this. We have Valerie. She wishes to secure her financial future as she plans for retirement after her husband has been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. She's 63. So she gets a benefit that has $5,000 monthly benefit. The maximum pool is 257 or 4 years. Inflation 3% compound. Now, this is where this becomes a little bit different. She's paying a one-time premium of $100,000 to purchase this policy, and the life insurance benefit is $122,892. So if she doesn't use any of her long-term care insurance, that death benefit to her beneficiaries will stay at $122,892. And now you can see, let's follow the asterisk down. If all long-term care insurance benefits are used, Valerie's beneficiaries will receive $12,289. So we know if she uses up her long-term care insurance benefit, all of that pool of $257,000 maximum benefit, it still guarantees a beneficiary of $12,289 if you have that type of policy. If not, and she used up the maximum benefit, it would gobble up all that death benefit and beneficiaries wouldn't receive anything. So when you're reviewing those for clients, you want to see if there's a guaranteed death benefit built into that policy, if that's important to the client. So let's take a look. Let's see how much Valerie aged. Valerie didn't age on that one, so we'll have to get the marketing team on this slide to see if we can age Valerie 17 years, or she just aged gracefully and you can't tell. So Valerie is now entering an assisted living facility to help with dressing and bathing due to osteoporosis and arthritis. She's 80, she's in poor health, and you can see how her benefits have grown up to over 8,000, up to over 400,000, and then that death benefit stayed the same, and whether or not she uses all that up will still guarantee her beneficiaries $12,000 death benefit, even if she uses $424,000 of long-term care insurance. So you can kind of see how those work, and I'm sure all of your minds are spinning on how do I integrate this into a Medicaid plan when I'm talking to clients about Medicaid planning. That's what my brain was doing. So I put in a couple very simple, just simple fact patterns. And again, when I was drafting these, I got a little overboard. So some of the slides, bear with me, have a lot of words on them and a lot of bullet points. But let's talk just two simple kind of scenarios. We have a traditional policy providing benefits for 5 years to cover the look-back period. So this would be the case where we have the client doing proactive planning, transferring assets into an irrevocable trust designed for Medicaid planning with the goal to wait out the five-year look-back period and then applying for Medicaid. The traditional policy has no cash value, so it wouldn't be considered an asset. We'll provide protection in the event the client needs long-term care before the look-back period expires or needs care in a non-Medicaid approved setting. And again, I think that's where I obviously jump straight to Medicaid planning because that's where I spend most of my days thinking about, but you could use, you know, obviously the people don't need to be in the nursing home to trigger these benefits, which is great. So let's look at Bob. We have Bob at 60. He comes in to engage your office because he just took care of his parents who need a long-term care. He wants to have a plan in place for himself should he need that type of care. You say, hey, Bob, a basic estate plan isn't going to do it. We're going to have to do a Medicaid a proactive plan should you need long-term care in the future. He understands and he's ready to move forward with an irrevocable Medicaid trust now to move some assets over. What we know from Medicaid planning, that'd be a penalized transfer if you were to apply within the look-back period, which is 5 years. I can say in all states, I guess. I used to say all states but California, but California doesn't have an asset test anymore, so I'm sure they don't have a look-back period anymore. So within a 5 years is what we're trying to figure out, is we want to get through the 5 years so we don't have to serve a penalty period. So you also recommend a traditional long-term care insurance policy with 5 years of protection. And he decides to follow your advice and he purchases the same. Bob is a great client. So Bob, 3 years later, has an unexpected stroke, but doesn't need nursing home level of care right away, and he's comfortable at home. Having professionals assist him in the home with care and housekeeping would be beneficial to his quality of life and lift the burden off of his loved ones. So what Bob does is he triggers his insurance benefits to pay for home health care. He saves comfortably and safety at home for 5 years, at which time his needs increase, and moving into a nursing home will provide the level of care he needs. Now, because Bob made his transfers when he met with you, we're more than 5 years out. The look-back period for transfers to the irrevocable trust has passed, and he will not receive a penalty should he apply for Medicaid benefits. And if this was a partnership policy and his state allowed that, he could receive an increase in countable assets and also an exemption from estate recovery if the policy was indeed a state partnership plan. So these types of policies flow seamlessly into proactive planning, and your clients are getting the care they need at home paid for. Plus, if they do need to go on Medicaid down the road, you figured out a way to transfer assets without a penalty because you're able to use the insurance to pay through that, increase the individual resource amount, you can keep more assets, and they're protected from estate recovery if you're in one of those very aggressive estate recovery states. So it's kind of the missing link when you think about proactive planning of how do we kind of make sure that the client's plan comes into effect and we have a safety net around that with the variable of health that we don't know if they're going to get through that 5 years when we're doing a proactive plan. So how could we use a hybrid policy in a similar situation? This, you want to have a client who has more liquid assets. So we have a client who has liquid assets available to invest in a life insurance policy, or has an existing life insurance policy that doesn't have any long-term care benefits associated with it. So if they've been paying into a life insurance policy for years and years, let's talk to them about adding the long-term care insurance rider to that, and you can convert those policies. They can then transfer additional assets. Usually we start with the home into an irrevocable trust and use the hybrid policy to cover any gap in the look-back period should it be needed prior to applying for Medicaid benefits. So here we have Jerry, 65. He's in good health, but has a family history of dementia and recently was a caretaker for his parents. Doesn't want his kids to have to worry about his care. Should he have a similar diagnosis? I'm sure you guys see these clients each and every day. He wants to engage your office in some proactive Medicaid planning. He has a home, a life insurance policy, and $300,000 in liquid resources. His goal is to leave a legacy for his kids while ensuring they're not responsible for his cost of care. You look at that life insurance policy. You work with an agent to convert the policy from a basic life insurance policy to a hybrid long-term care insurance policy, and you can use a 1035 exchange to do that. And then we're also going to add an additional amount of $100,000 to the premium to increase that maximum benefit. So Jerry also at that time transfers $100,000 in his home into an irrevocable Medicaid trust. And so we've gotten his plan put in place. 2 years later, he's diagnosed with Alzheimer's, but his doctor thinks he can slow the cognitive decline with medication, diet, and exercise to extend his life expectancy. Jerry now has severe cognitive impairment, so he triggers his policy. We get a caretaker in the home to come in daily for homemaker support until his policy benefits and the cash value of the policy are exhausted after 3 years. The family decides that Jerry would, for safety and care, would be to go into the nursing home. He comes back to the firm. Now, 2 years plus 3 years gets us to 5 years. The look back period has run. You can help if he has any assets left, do a spend down plan for the remaining assets. He can apply for Medicaid benefits and qualifies for benefits as quickly as possible while protecting the home plus $100,000 that he's passed on to his kids through the irrevocable trust. So we got him through the look back period using one of these hybrid policies because he was able to purchase that. And if nothing happened and he didn't need to trigger it, he would still have those life insurance benefits going to his beneficiaries. So hopefully, again, those were real basic. That's basically how in-depth my mind works, but I'm sure there's lots of different options that you all are thinking about how you can couple long-term care insurance with the Medicaid plans that you're putting together for your clients. So there's lots of different options just to kind of wrap this up that can be customized. And I think that's the takeaway that I got when I started working with our insurance professionals here at Kraus Financial is how customized these policies can be for your clients and what their needs are. But the key takeaway that is universal is talking to clients earlier about these options will allow them to lock in better benefits, better rates, and better coverage. And then really what we're talking about here, and this is something that I think we all should embrace when we're talking about Medicaid planning and estate planning, is coupling with that with long-term care insurance and estate planning really gives your clients control over who, where, and how they pay for their long-term care. And this is in contrast to crisis planning. When we're talking about crisis planning, we really only have a couple of levers we can pull. Thank goodness we have the Medicaid compliant annuity that we can accelerate benefits for our clients, but we really are talking about one scenario, nursing home care, in a Medicaid-approved facility using the Medicaid-compliant annuity as a spend down. And so with this and talking to your clients earlier, we can get them care at home. We can decide who's going to be their caregiver, how we're going to pay for it, what we want to protect. If we do need to go on Medicaid, can we increase those restrictions on estate recovery in those states where estate recovery is a primary challenge? It just opens up the doors to the clients to be in full control. And you as the attorney, you're bringing greater value because you can help guide them through all these insurance products that can have their head spinning. And like I said at the beginning of this presentation, what I used to say is, well, tell their clients they need an insurance, a long-term care insurance product, but without knowing a little bit about these long-term care insurance products, they're going to come back to you with more questions and you're going to be able to answer. So being able to know at least these basics that you learned here on this webinar hopefully will help you guide them, make sure that they are achieving their goals for their assets and their estate plans by considering long-term care, and also using insurance as just another tool in the toolbox to be able to make sure that they're getting the care they want, they need, and where they receive that care. Hopefully it's at home, which is where most people want to receive that. So that was a lot in 57 minutes, and I appreciate you guys bearing with me. If you want to have a one-on-one call with me about long-term care insurance and how you can help your clients and how we can help you get that insurance for your clients through Kraus Financial, and you want to work with us, please feel free, scan this code, get on my calendar. I'd love to have those conversations with you. I learned so much from them, and hopefully we can help you add this to the services that you're providing your clients. And to the other side of the house, we're reducing the amount of Medicaid-compliant annuities that need to come out because we have these benefits assured. I'm sure they don't want to hear that, our planners, but if we can get everybody a good long-term care insurance policy, then we're not as reliable on Medicaid and Medicaid planning that, again, restricts our clients' options when it comes to that situation, that part of their life. Amy, do we have any questions?
All right. One question here. This came in when you were talking about traditional policies, and you were talking about that there is a refund of premium option with traditional policies. Do you have any idea how that might impact the cost of a policy by adding a feature like that?
It'll go up. Other than that, they are really policy specific. So if you have a client that's interested, let us know. We can get some basic information. We can run some basic numbers, and we can do a compare and contrast of with that option and without that option. But it will increase the premium amount.
All right, perfect. Well, we are coming up at the top of the hour. Any other questions that came in, don't worry. I'll get those over to Jim, and he'll follow up with you. I do want to thank you, Jim, for your great presentation today. And I want to let everyone know that a recording of this webinar will be available shortly through Attorney Access. If you don't already have an account, you can head on over to krausfinancial.com/join to get started. Signing up is quick and easy and gives you access to all of our latest educational content and long-term care planning resources. So thank you, everyone, for joining us today, and I hope you have a great day.
Thanks, everybody.